This is an MUT Radio podcast.
Yes, I'm very welcome to our delegates and also to our online participants. So my honor today is to introduce to you Mr. Patrick Martel. Patrick is the research and impact lead at Innovate Durban, which is a non-profit organization dedicated to fostering innovation in the Durban and wider KwaZulu-Natal region. In his role, he leads the organization's research department and oversees key projects, focusing on the state of innovation in KwaZulu-Natal, publication and entertainment development and commercialization support study. He has also worked on a project partnering with the Innovate UK to establish a water innovation network between South Africa and the UK. Patrick's expertise lies in transdisciplinary research projects with a primary focus on water, climate and environmental governance. Noteworthy projects in his portfolio include the LIRA 2030 project on transformative climate adaptation and the Water Research Commission project demonstrating the value of ecological infrastructure in the Ngeni catchment. He's also contributing author on the IPCC special report on the ocean, coast and cryosphere. In a consulting capacity, Patrick has recently worked as a water and climate governance technical expert on the Presidential Climate Commission project related to the April 2022 floods in KwaZulu-Natal, and as a governance and social expert on the CICLIA Transformative Riverine Management Support Project. Patrick has been actively involved in water and climate adaptation initiatives in Durban, notably the Palmy Catchment Rehabilitation Project, where he chairs an advisory group and is currently part of a community-based flood early warning system, which we desperately need in KwaZulu-Natal. Patrick is currently a business advisory board member for Netbiz at the Durban University of Technology and an advisory panel member for developing an ecological infrastructure management plan and ecological infrastructure investment plan for the Greater Ngeni catchment. And so with that, very welcome, Patrick. We are looking forward to you and to your presentation. And colleagues, with Patrick's presentation, he has asked that we kindly keep the questions towards the end and not during the presentation. So thank you all.
So, Professor Justice, a little bit taller. So, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. So, thank you very much for the introduction. So, today I'm going to be talking about intellectual property and the sustainable development goals. So, I think it's something slightly a little bit different to what you've been focusing on in your summer school. I also think, you know, this is your final day. So, hopefully that this presentation will interest you and keep you captivated. So let's just start. Okay, so to just give an overview of my presentation, so I'm going to be talking about the Sustainable Development Goals, or the SDGs. And then we're going to explore how intellectual property and the SDGs are related to one another. I'm going to go through every single SDGs relationship with intellectual property. So it's going to be a fairly long, kind of presentation, but hopefully you'll get some nuggets of information out of it. And then also we're going to just look at some of the possible ways forward. Okay, so I'm from Innovate Durban. So just to tell you a little bit more about us, we are actually a non-profit company. Most of our funding comes from the eThekwini municipality. And our role is to stimulate innovation within Durban. Okay, so we're all about supporting and promoting innovation. And what's actually quite important here is promoting an inclusive innovation ecosystem, particularly in Durban. So our vision is that we want to transform the region into a dynamic and inclusive innovation ecosystem. Okay, so how do we actually interface with the SDGs. So one of the most recent examples is we've had our Youth Innovation Challenge, and this was actually framed by the SDGs. So we looked at, it was climate change issues, water issues, we looked at built environment issues, early warning system, issues. And basically we got lots of different students from different disciplines, and then they came up with creative, solutions, and then they developed prototypes from it. So you can see some of our projects are actually specifically framed by the SDGs. And I think maybe you also would have seen that from, the previous slide was just presented our vision. We actually are quite aligned with SDG 2, just looking at, addressing inequality. We're all about being inclusive. That's like our focus. Last night we actually won an award for, grassroots innovation. And so that's like inherently focused on being inclusive. So any and everyone can actually be an innovator. Okay, so now I'm just going to focus more on the SDGs. Okay, so apologies for those of you who have fairly in-depth knowledge on the SDGs, but I'm going to just take you through the process about how the SDGs were formed, where that actually came from, and then just go into it a little bit more in depth. Okay, so the SDGs, they actually emerged from the Millennium Development Goals. Okay, so these goals, these global goals, it's actually like a policy framework that focused a lot on developing countries and focused a lot on issues like extreme poverty and hunger. Okay, and when you compare the MDGs and the SDGs were actually designed to be more comprehensive and more universal. Okay, so now where the SDGs came from, it was actually from the Millennium Development Goals. So these had their foundations in the early 1990s, and there were numerous United Nations conferences that actually focused on different aspects of development. And basically, in a nutshell, in New York at the Millennium Summit in 2000, 189 of the UN member states signed this Millennium Declaration. Okay, and that ultimately led to the Millennium Development Goals. And so the main focus here was that, the nations were committed, to have global partnerships. They're focused on values like freedom, equality, solidarity, and tolerance. And then in 2001, this declaration was translated into the 8 MDGs. MDGs, sorry. Okay, so what are they? So you can see on the screen, the first one is eradicating extreme poverty and hunger, achieving universal primary education, promoting gender equality and empowering women, reduce child mortality, improving maternal health, combat HIV/AIDS, malaria and other diseases, ensure environmental sustainability, and then a global partnership for development. Okay, so you can see that there's eight goals, and these went, as I said, from 2001 to 2015. Okay, but there were some issues. Okay, so what are some of the challenges associated with the MDGs? So just when you're looking at the literature, you'll see that they're considered to have a fairly narrow scope. So they were also mainly focused on developing countries. They overlooked contemporary issues such as climate change. And then when you look back at the previous slide with the 8 MDGs, they had a limited focus on economic development. Then just actually implementing the MDGs, it was a fairly top-down approach, quite little local inputs. Some of the goals were unrealistic, especially for poorer countries. I think as people realize it, you don't have a one-size-fits-all approach. That doesn't really work, and the targets for the MDGs were kind of designed in that way. Then there were also measurement issues. So there was inconsistent data collection, some goals lacked clear metrics, and then also tracking your progress was quite difficult. And so with the actual NDGs, there were 21 targets. Okay, so it seems like, okay, so you have 8 goals, 21 targets. Okay, now, okay, coming towards the end of the NDGs, obviously the focus is changing then to the sustainable development goals. But what is sustainable development about? Okay, so sustainable development, when you think about it, it's development that meets the needs of your current generation as well as meeting the needs of your future generation. Okay, so what are quite key principles here? It's intergenerational equity. So, equity between different generations over different periods of time. And then intra-generational equity. So it's equity, like amongst your current generation. Okay, and a lot of this, it came from the Brundtland Commission in 1987. That's where there was this big kind of focus on sustainable development. Okay, now, what are kind of the key historical milestones of the SDGs? Okay, so you can see in 2012, the ideas of the SDGs was first proposed at the Rio+20 conference in Brazil. You can just see as it actually progresses over time. And then in 2015, all 193 UN member states adopted the SDGs at the United Nations Sustainable Development Summit. Okay. And then, these things take time to come into place. So in 2016, the SDGs officially came into force. Okay, so now we're just going into a little bit more detail. Okay, why were the SDGs needed? So it's basically a little bit of a critique of the MDGs. Okay, so the whole focus was to become more inclusive. So at the point in time, there was a lot of global consultation ranging from, businesses to civil society to academia. There was a call for broader scope. Okay, so there was a greater focus on environmental sustainability, addressing inequality both within and between different countries. There was this need to have this interconnected approach, and acknowledging the actual connections between your various development challenges and how they intersect with one another. So just with the whole notion of sustainable development, it's a normative concept. It's something that we should strive and aim to, achieve. Whether or not we actually achieve it is debatable. But it's basically you're looking at interfaces between environmental, economic, social, and also governance kind of challenges. Then when you learn from the experience from the NDGs, so some of the goals were unrealistic, couldn't get to the targets. And then obviously there were some successes, there were also some failures. Okay, so what are your key differences between MDGs and the SDGs? Okay, so the SDGs apply to all countries, not just developing countries. So South Africa is obviously a developing country. And so as I said earlier, environmental sustainability is a key focus. And then with the SDGs, they've developed this comprehensive, monitoring and evaluation framework. So now there are 169 targets. So it went from 21 targets to 169 targets. And there are 232 indicators, which can help us measure the notion of sustainable development. And then what's important here is that there's this great emphasis on partnerships between your government, your private sector, and civil society. So there's a big drive now to include also civil society. Okay, so here are our 17 SDGs. I hope most of the people in the room and online have actually seen some of these. But what I'll do is actually go through each one, and then I will link it to intellectual property, which is obviously the focus of this group. Okay, so I'm hoping on the last day of your kind of conference or workshop, you should have an idea of what intellectual property is. So it's to do obviously with your copyrights, patents, trademarks, and trade secrets. So I'm hoping this group knows that. Okay, so how do they actually link? Just from a broad perspective, intellectual property can serve as a powerful tool that can play a pivotal role in fostering innovation through technology transfer and knowledge sharing to accelerate progress, towards your SDGs. Okay, and to just point out that intellectual property actually wasn't strongly featured in the SDGs. It kind of emerges from it, when you actually interrogate them. Okay, so there's also different forms of, intellectual property contributing towards SDGs. Okay, so it can result in innovation, technological advancement. It can also be, include technology transfer. There's also access to knowledge and education. There's a focus on biodiversity, traditional knowledge, climate change mitigation and clean technologies, and then access to medicine and healthcare. I'm not going to go through all of these things just at the moment. You can read through it if you feel like it afterwards. But what is actually key is there is this tension between intellectual property and then your sustainable development goals. So I've put in just some key quotes here that show this kind of relationship full of tension. Okay, so your IP rights can actually both help and hinder sustainable development. So if you look at, the first quote by the World Intellectual Property Organization and the United Nations Development Program, so IP rights can serve as both a bridge and a barrier to achieving sustainable development objectives. Okay, then the former UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, he said, on one level, intellectual property rights are essential for developing new medicines and adapting green technologies, but they can also create barriers to accessing medicine and clean technologies when they're most needed. And then more recently, Prof. Nkube from UCT, she said, the SDGs are about inclusion and working together towards global solutions. But intellectual property is the opposite. It's about exclusion, asserting your own rights and protecting those above all else. They're diametrically opposed. So I just think with some of these quotes, you can just see the tension between intellectual property, exclusivity, and then the SDGs, where it's, you're looking at the global good, societal good. Okay, so when you're exploring how intellectual property actually relates to the SDGs, here's a book that I would actually recommend to read. It was released in 2024. It's got quite a comprehensive overview of how intellectual property actually relates to the SDGs. It's one of the first books to actually look at this. So it's Amani et al.'s book, The Elder Companion to Intellectual Property and the Sustainable Development Goals. So with this presentation, I'm drawing on some of the main arguments presented in this fairly comprehensive book. It's about 500 pages. So what are some of the main arguments? And then I'm going to identify how there's basically positive impacts of intellectual property on the SDGs, and then also some of the challenges. Okay. So this is SDG number one, okay, focusing on no poverty. So we want to end poverty in all of its forms everywhere. Okay, so, let me go back. Okay, there we go. Now we're going back. Okay, so in terms of no poverty, what is the positive intellectual property impact? Okay, so it enables wealth generation through protected innovations. So basically, it protects your commercialized innovations. It protects your cultural products via geographic indications. So just to go a little bit into that. Okay, so with your geographic indication, it's basically a sign used to identify the product's geographical origin and unique qualities, you know, from the region that it's kind of emerged. So it focuses on your unique characteristics associated with the geographic regional origin. So you can just, some examples are thinking of, you know, champagne from France, Scotch whiskey, tequila from Mexico, Swiss watches. And then from South Africa, you've got Karoo Lamb, rooibos tea. So those type of things. So it protects that kind of like cultural aspect. It also creates economic opportunities through intellectual property assets. Then just in terms, when you're looking at the SDG number one, no poverty, what is the IP challenge? Sometimes the high cost can exclude your poorest population. So when you're looking at, you know, the themes kind of embedded within the SDGs, you know, you obviously want to try to be inclusive, but there's this tension. There's access barriers, and then often your benefits often only flow to your existing IP holders. So is it inclusive? Does it promote equality? There's, you know, sometimes questions on that. Okay, moving to SDG number two. So that's all focusing on ending hunger, achieving food security and improving nutrition, promoting sustainable agriculture. Okay, so just the positive IP impact is that when you're looking at zero hunger, okay, there's incentivizations for agricultural innovation. There's a protection of new crop varieties and also your different farming technologies. And then there's also, this encourages investment in various food security solutions. So it's all about, you know, obviously stimulating innovation on that side, related to food security. Then the IP challenges, what are they? Okay, so it restricts traditional seed saving practices. So before this presentation, I didn't really hadn't really come to you know, across this term. So seed savings, how this actually links here, it's associated with breeder rights, and basically there's a focus on seed quality, market transparency, and also presentation on seeds. And so with seed exchanges, it's basically the growing control over seeds by the private sector. So something, well, to me that seemed it was a bit different that I wasn't aware of. Okay, also what this does, it, your IP sometimes makes agricultural innovations unaffordable. Okay, so you can see there's also this, once again, the strong equity lens. Yeah, and then also limits small farmers' independence. So when it some probably favors maybe your larger farms. Yeah. Okay, so SDG number three is looking at good health and well-being. So how does this link to intellectual property? Okay, so positive impacts. Oops. Sorry, let's go back. We'll get there eventually. Okay, so some positive impacts. Okay, so as you can see, similar to the other ones, it drives pharmaceutical innovation. So basically a lot of IP, it promotes your innovation. It enables investment in medical research. It helps facilitate the support of healthcare technology development. Okay, so then moving on to some of the challenges. Okay. Obviously, there's the limiting of essential medicines, you know, to your wider population. There's also the potential to increase the cost of your healthcare, and then also restricts generic drug production. And this particular SDG is often mentioned, or a focus on when you're actually looking at the relationship between the SDGs and intellectual property. Think back at the COVID pandemic and what the world actually needed, and also maybe, yeah, just about how intellectual property and institute related, you know, during that case. Okay, then looking at SDG number four, quality and education. So it's all about ensuring inclusive and equitable education, promoting lifelong learning opportunities for all. Okay, so great focus on obviously the educational side of things. We'll get there eventually when the clicker works. Okay, so just what are some of the positive intellectual property impacts? Okay, so it encourages the creation of quality educational concepts and content. Promotes obviously your academic research, different types of publications, and then also supports educational innovation and technology. But then on the other end of the spectrum, it also creates barriers for your educational materials. So not everyone maybe can afford to have these different types of educational materials. It also increases the costs of some of your textbooks, some of your resources, and then also maybe it might even limit digital learning access. Okay, moving on to SDG number 5. That's focusing on achieving gender equality, empowering all women and girls. Okay, so how does the SDGs relate to this? Maybe we never should. We're getting there. So on the positive side, okay, it provides equal legal protection for innovations. Okay, it enables women investors to secure rights. And then creates opportunities for economic empowerment, particularly for women. Okay, but when you're looking at this from a gender equality lens, this doesn't actually address, some of the systemic or even structural biases. When you're obviously looking at the SDGs and intellectual property, so the actual systemic gender biases, those continue to be perpetuated. Also, just what the research is saying is that there's a significant underrepresentation of women, obviously in relation to IP. And then also it maintains and reinforces your structural barriers to access. Okay, then SDG number 6, this is a SDG I've worked actually quite a lot on. So ensuring availability and sustainable management of water and sanitation for all. Okay. So basically with this SDG, the main focus here is once again, driving IP drives your innovation. You obviously want to commercialize, your water treatment, your water purification technologies, and this also encourages your infrastructure development. Now, what is the main challenge, particularly in the water sector, where you have almost like different kind of ways that society approaches water? You have water, it can be viewed as a societal good or a social good, we have our notion of free basic water, so basically ensuring that everyone has universal access to water, but that's at using actually different technologies. And then you can also view water as an economic good, where people are paying for the actual water service, and that once again links with your kind of technologies. So what is a key almost challenge or threat here is actually commodifying water. So in South Africa, we've got our constitutional right to access water. Everyone has their constitutional right. In other countries, that's not so much the case. Water's very much privatized. So when you're looking at the water sector from an equality perspective, that's something that's really important. It also creates access barriers to technology. And then, as I've noted, it conflicts with the human right to water. Okay, SDG number 7. Okay, so this is all to do with affordable and clean energy. This clicker doesn't like my presentations. okay, so on the positive side, okay, once again, spurs innovation. Also, it obviously helps you protect your green technology investments, And then also, you know, obviously tries to spur on, you know, energy efficiencies and all those type of things. Okay. Then on the challenges side of things, the other end of the spectrum, okay, people have limited access sometimes to clean technology because of the actual intellectual property involved. There are sometimes barriers, you know, in the global south to this, you know, this between global north and global south, where there might also be the restriction of technology transfers. Another SDG where, like my organization that I'm from, Innovate Durban, works on is creating job opportunities for the youth. So it's all about being inclusive, promoting sustainable economic growth, full and productive employment. Okay, so, you know, it's obviously, this SDG is all about, well, like the RP side of things. It promotes your innovation, it protects your business investments, and the whole focus is on stimulating economic development, which is, as I noted earlier, one of the newer things when you're actually comparing the MDGs and the SDGs, this focus on economic development across both developed and developing countries. Okay, so it also, one thing when you're looking at SDG number 8 and RP, a key challenge is that it could potentially restrict your worker mobility. Okay, so what does this mean? When you, your employers basically use legal means to limit an employee's ability to leave and then compete in another job, so they can actually claim ownership of and like also the proprietary knowledge, so that could potentially restrict a worker from moving from one place to another. But also there could be limited knowledge sharing. And then this actually creates unequal economic opportunities. So I think as you can see, as we're going through this, you can see there's obviously the pros and then there's the cons. It doesn't obviously apply to every single case, but it's just like, you know, when you're looking at things, these are the potentially what could happen. Moving on to SDG number 9, which Innovate Durban focuses on. Obviously, that's all about building resilient infrastructure, promoting inclusivity, and sustainable industrialization to foster innovation. Okay. So once again, RP promotes your innovation, your technological advances, infrastructure development. But then there's also the, on the opposite end of the spectrum, it creates innovation barriers. There's the potential to perpetuate your different development gaps where some areas, you know, will be developed and continue to be developed. And then those who are kind of lacking development, the gap between basically your rich and your poor will increase. There's also potential to show both also gender and regional disparities. So this one could is actually linked to SDG number 5. Okay, moving on to number 10. I think this SDG is, you know, kind of inherent in the whole SDG policy framework. So it's reducing inequality within and among countries. So you can see the notion of intra-generational equity. Okay, so positive things is that it enables your RP enables your value capture from innovation. You obviously have your legal protection frameworks. It promotes your various economic opportunities. But then on the con side of things, there's this potential to widen the gap. You know, from a wealth perspective, it can perpetuate and enhance your existing structural inequalities, and then also access barriers can be potentially created. Okay, next one, number 11. So we are number 11 out of 17. I know this is a lot going through this and it might seem a bit repetitive, but it's good to be aware of the SDGs because it's a global framework that, you know, applies to. So then just looking at number 11, it's sustainable cities and communities. So it's basically all about making your cities and human settlements inclusive, safe, resilient, and sustainable. Okay, so on the positive IP impact side of things, so what this promotes your smart city innovation, promotes urban technology solutions, drives sustainable infrastructure development. And then on the challenges side of things, there's obviously your restricted technology access. You also have data governance issues. So the complexities around who owns data, how it's used, the potentially complexities can emerge associated with that. Then there's the limited technology sharing between cities. With the SDGs, one of the main focuses is also how you localize these global goals. So like ETEC Weenie here, where we're sitting here in Durban, they all have a particular way of localizing it in our integrated development program. Other cities will do it in slightly different ways. Basically, with this, what it's saying that there might be limited technological sharing between the different cities. Okay, then just moving on to SDG number 12. So this is all about responsible consumption and production. Okay, so it has the potential to promote innovative solutions. This is all about your green technology and development, and then certifying, like you being able to certify your sustainable products. What are some of the challenges? It restricts the right to repair. And then there's also the potential to create recycling barriers. So people, when they're trying to be sustainable, recycle things, there might be IP involved where, not everyone can use certain technologies and whatnot, and it creates your different barriers. Okay, then also another SDG I've worked on a fair amount. So this is all associated with climate change and taking climate action. So with this particular SDG, it's very aligned with the Paris Agreement, which is also emerged from obviously the United Nations. And so this is quite aligned with the Paris Agreement from 2016. And it's all about taking urgent action to, basically fight climate change and its associated impacts. So what's important here is that your intellectual property actually facilitates your climate technology innovation and all different types of investments associated with kind of your technologies and whatnot, looking at both mitigating climate change and then addressing the actual impacts of climate change. Okay, so what are some of the challenges? It's once again limiting your climate solution access. There might be potentially slow technology transfers between different countries. It can create cost barriers also for developing nations. And when you're looking at kind of climate change, often the developing nations are impacted more than developed nations, in a fair amount of the cases is that your developing nations often produce more greenhouse gases, which exacerbate climate change and its impacts. Okay, SDG 14, looking at life below water. Okay, so this is all about conserving and sustainably using our oceans, the sea and marine resources for sustainable development. So this particular SDG is all focused on on the sea and our oceans. Yeah. So it's IP, it helps us protect our various marine conservation technologies, helps us drive innovation, and then also sustainable fishing solutions. You can see here another key theme is about around access. It limits genetic resource sharing, and then also creates barriers to data collection. So that's more from the research side of things. Then moving from the sea to life on land. Okay, so this is all about protecting, restoring, and promoting sustainable use of terrestrial ecosystems. So it's all about sustainability on on land. Okay, so once again, it provides biodiversity protection, innovation, conservation. Technologies and also enhances sustainable resource management, which is what we need to aim for the SDGs. Okay. Then, what is a challenge? I've never heard of this particular challenge before, preparing for this presentation. So, it creates biopiracy risks. Okay. So what is biopiracy? So I'm just going to read this. So it's the practice of commercially exploiting a naturally occurring biochemical for genetic material, especially by obtaining patents that restrict its future use, whilst failing to pay fair compensation of the communities from which it originates. So that's something that's quite unique for this one, this particular SDG. Then it also limits indigenous knowledge protection and potentially also restricts genetic resource access. So we're nearly there. We're on SDG number 16. So this is all about promoting peace, justice, and strong institutions. And now when you've got a global policy framework, obviously you need strong institutions, you need to get a strong government to enable these kind of platforms to engage on sustainable development related issues. Okay, so when you're looking at the positive impact of intellectual property, it's all associated with creating your legal frameworks for innovation. It's associated with international cooperation. There's obviously support institutional development. And then it also creates access to justice issues when you're looking at it from the challenge side of things. And then this other fairly... I've never heard of this term once again before, enables forum shopping. Okay, so what is forum shopping? It's when a party chooses a legal forum that is favorable to their kind of position. So they selected jurisdiction with procedural, procedural laws that are more advantageous, and it's almost considered an abuse of legal process. So that's also looking at things from like an ethical perspective. So another challenge is that there's potential lack of institutional equity. Then the final SDG, partnerships for goals. So everyone here is from different organizations, and I think just the way kind of society is going is that everyone's looking at partnering with one another. There's this kind of mass kind of approach to partner, to collaborate. So this is all about strengthening the means of implementation and revitalizing the global partnership for sustainable development. So what's important here? So IP, the positive impact is that it enables technology transfer agreements, it supports international collaboration, facilitates your public-private partnerships. What are some challenges? So once again, you can see partnerships barriers, technology transfer issues, and then also there's a potential for limiting knowledge sharing. Okay, so now that I've gone through all SDGs, I'm hoping everyone's still awake. But how can intellectual property be leveraged to support sustainable development? Okay, so these are just some of the ways forward. that's, you know, I actually drew from that book that I recommended. So they actually promote, say that we should focus on institutional reforms. Okay, so we formed the depot focus, have cross policy agreements between different countries, so promoting kind of coherence and consistency. Okay, then there's also you can also look at various legal mechanisms. So this TRIPS flexibility use, so that's, I think people here most likely will know what this is about, but basically it's a set of policy options that allow countries to address the impact of patents on access to medicine. So what are some examples of the flexibilities? So that's ensuring that people have compulsory licenses, that there's also limitations on patents, also the concept of parallel importation. Then just looking at technology transfer, you can focus on public goods, removing knowledge barriers, creating global tech coalitions, moving on to access and equity. We can have open educational resources, various innovation initiatives, and then also we can support local manufacturing. Also remembering the SDGs is, you know, you've got to obviously, you know, think locally but act globally. That's one of the most buzzword phrases associated with sustainable development. Then looking also from a gender and also inclusivity perspective, we can obviously strive to address our structural barriers, reform IP strategies, and then also have particular programs maybe to improve women's access. Looking at traditional knowledge, you can recognize cultural production, you know, give priority to local and indigenous voices, and then also focus on fair benefit sharing. There's some other ways forward is to obviously build capacity. So you can have different programs to help, you know, build capacity in that, building your manufacturing capability, and then also strengthening your local institutions. We can also promote collaborative approaches, you know, then also focus on business investment, and then also R&D. So you can see that there's a number of ways that, you know, we can move forward. Okay, so now I've reached the end of my presentation. And so I hope what's kind of emerged from this is that, you know, you've got this normative concept of sustainable development with these kind of focuses on inter and intra-generational equity. But then, you know, when you're looking at intellectual property, it's all about creating exclusive, commercialized, you know, rights. So it's this kind of tension, like, you know, for like almost like self-interest or maybe your like company's interest as opposed to global good and those type of things. So it's like, how do you maneuver that? But basically, we need to find the right balance between intellectual property protection and accessibility. So I think that would be the end of my presentation. So, yeah. Any questions?
Another round of applause to Mr. Mattel. First question for you.
Hi, so I have a question regarding SDG 15, because that's the That's actually the subject of my PhD, like the relation between intellectual property rights and, let's say, in general, biodiversity and environmental sustainability. And what I see, indeed, is like when I was looking at the two disciplines, if I may say it like that, like sustainable development and IP rights, they indeed have very diverging objectives, right? But they also have common denominators. So for me, one of the common denominators is actually innovation. But the question is here, like, I think that IP owners can do more to enable the sustainable development goals. But how would you say you can motivate the IP owners to enable sustainable development and to do more?
I would say it's obviously it's a bit of a challenging question, Matt. But I would say that it's maybe looking almost like at the values of people. It's like people's value system, and getting almost corporations to kind of, focus on the environment, focus on social, focus on governance related issues. And if that's almost like core to their almost like vision and mandates and ways of actually doing things, it might change almost like their approach and ways of actually dealing with intellectual property. I think like with this type of question, you are obviously like almost like the expert on it, since you're doing like your PhD on this particular topic. But I do kind of feel that it's a values based approach. Maybe also from a PR perspective. So companies also want to look good, to their customers, to their directors, to their shareholders, and whatnot. So it's maybe it's linked with, I would say, with values maybe and perceptions. I hope I answered that adequately. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Morning. Oh, morning. My question is, by how many years do we need to change the goalpost again? Because I think, to the best of my knowledge, we are supposed to achieve all these objectives by 2030. Even in South Africa, we have the NDP, which says that we need to have achieved this by 2030. So by how many years do we need to shift the goalpost? Because I think AU now is saying 2063 or something like that. Will we ever get there? Because it seems like we are always shifting posts. We started with the Millennium Goals, now we have Mandates and SDGs. Will we ever get there? Thank you.
Now, that's a really important question about almost it's the whole notion of sustainable development. So is sustainable development actually achievable? It's a normative concept. Okay, so, can you actually say an entire country is sustainable? It's, when you're looking at your different indicators and those type of things, you can look at measuring from that perspective. But then, you're talking about obviously moving goalposts. That is going to keep on happening. Because things don't happen the way, you can have particular global policy frameworks. It doesn't necessarily mean that development's actually going to match these kind of policy frameworks. With sustainable development, it's a normative concept. It's something that we should aim to get to. Whether we actually get there or not, is going to be debatable, because all countries have different starting points. For example, you compare South Africa to India to USA to the UK. There's all different starting points, and for some countries that they'll focus on certain things, on others they'll focus on others. But yeah, as you mentioned, the AU 2063, that's obviously a long time. My take is that obviously there's going to be some other kind of policy framework after the SDGs. There has to be. But as long as, we are trying to move towards like a better direction in general, that's almost like what a normative concept is that you're aiming for continual improvement. And as long as we are improving and not regressing. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Another question?
Okay, my question is almost like a continuation from Jimmy's. It's similar, almost similar. My question is, to what extent do you think we've achieved this? Yes, we're looking at 2063. And also the other thing, of course, the main aim is economic development. So I'm looking at from 2016. According to your analysis, do you think we are somewhere? And how are we going to achieve the aspect of all nations? Because when you look at a country like Uganda, where we don't protect pharmaceuticals, and yet we have a lot of innovations that would have come from things like traditional knowledge and all that, do you think it will be 2063? Do you think is it achievable for all nations?
That's also like a very difficult question. I don't have obviously the contextual knowledge of Uganda, but like I do know when you're looking at the SDGs, say in South Africa, I can talk about that. You know, and some things we are doing well. So like, say for example, if I'm looking at maybe access to water, we're doing really well in that. And when we're looking at access to sanitation, we're lagging, we're behind on that. And then when you also have continuously kind of like growing populations, it also creates more challenges because it's almost like, there's moving goalposts, but your actual kind of things that you're like your population size and those type of things are constantly changing as well. You know, so will we ever actually achieve full development? I personally don't think so. You know, there's always going to be, the haves and the have-nots in society. It's kind of like with our capitalist system, that's kind of the way that things are kind of happens. But, you know, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't strive to promote more equality, reduce inequality, help, you know, marginalized communities, have a particular focus. So I hope I answered your question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, good morning. I'm looking at it from a policy perspective where we have IP already existing even before this goes to set. And so these rules, I would call them rules or regulations that regulate IP, for example, patents, you have your 20 years of protection. And most of these goals are being set while these rules already exist. And then even today, if I get a patent, it will outlive the goals that have been set. So my question is, do you think maybe we need a policy reforms that work around maybe emergency situation where, for example, in the case of COVID, where you have these big organizations that were researching and they found the cure and now they want to make money out of it, but then you have these poor countries that can't afford the COVID. Do you think maybe we need a policy that's going to regulate to say, okay, on some certain innovations, maybe we need a more collaborated approach to ensure that everyone gets the benefit of the research.
Yeah, most definitely, yeah, I agree with you on that. But, I suppose with this whole kind of debate, it brings in almost the ethical side of things. And, obviously you want to help people, if there's like a COVID crisis or, those types of things. You want, medication to be available to all people to help. But then also look at it from a big private sector company's perspective where they've obviously put investments into researching and developing and actually coming up with innovative solutions. So you can just see that there's this kind of inherent tension between, exclusive commercial rights, and then also, these kind of normative global goals. One of the closing infographics that I had for the way forward, it was one of the things was institutional research. So it's actually, we need to actually look at that and how it actually relates. So when you're looking at the institutional reforms, there's so many complexities because you're looking at that, there's different laws in different countries. Okay. So it's inherently complex. And, the more, I think, the more like, debates and more focus that's placed on looking at maybe a policy viewpoint and maybe having more flexibilities and that I think would be better for society.
Thank you, Patrick. Are there any questions online for our colleagues? No, there are no questions online. Then maybe we can just allow one more question here. One last question.
Hello, I'm contributing to Emmanuel's question. Emmanuel, sometimes in certain jurisdictions like Ghana, we, in cases of emergencies like the COVID and all of that, there is a need where the government grants something like a compulsory license for them to, you know, make those drugs available. Do you get what I'm trying to say? So in IP, we have, in certain cases where there's emergencies and all of that, the government can issue a compulsory license so that these drugs can be accessible for everybody.
So it's just a comment.
So you just have to check your jurisdiction. It's a case-by-case basis.
Okay, that was just a comment. I see there was one question at the back. Maybe we can allow that one last question.
Yes, sir. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, sir, for the wonderful presentation. So every time we speak of sustainable development goals, I always think about it from a critique perspective, I should say. So would you say, in your own experience, if you, I'm sure you've been in the space for a long time, would you say, are they for us as developing countries? Because if you look at each individual goal, and then you look at what's happening behind, let's take no poverty, for instance. What does that mean for developing countries, taking into account that most of the sustainability that is achieved by first worlds happens at the expense of developing countries through mining and all sorts of resource exploitation? So would you say for developing countries, as Jimmy was alluding to, the movement of the goalpost, will we ever achieve this, given that economic growth is at the center of that sustainable development as well? So if we speak of the economy, we consider GDPs, manufacturing, that's based on exploitation of resources to an extent. So would you say developing countries are well positioned to even get close to a point whereby they achieve the sustainability goals or objectives? Thank you.
Thank you for the question. I think just with your question, I agree. You know, when you're looking at anything with, you know, related to a global development agenda, you have to be critical. Because like kind of all things in life, there are they're always going to be the haves and the have nots. In the kind of like the developing country kind of state, you know, obviously we are like more kind of equated to the have-nots in some ways. So we're starting from behind. I think also just when reflecting on your question is that, okay, so with this whole kind of normative notion of sustainable development, it's something that we should aspire to, you know, having no poverty. I think that's something that, you know, we need to aspire to. But then we also have, you know, like kind of the global capitalist system entrenched in, you know, in the world, and that's kind of how things run, and it's like structural and systemic issues. So we're always going to be facing those types of challenges, but I still think we need to you know, strive to move in the positive direction, as opposed to just being saying, like, okay, we've achieved zero this, we don't have any more hunger or anything like that. I think there will always be hunger, because we're going to have population growth. There's always going to be, you know, resources are going to be scarce, but we need to just aim to, you know, always try to like improve. Maybe look at it from that kind of perspective, not be like, okay, sustainable development is the, you know, like as an end, look at it as like a means. So like, how are we going to achieve? How are we going to improve? And focus on that continual moving up the curve. I'd say that would be more my response. Thank you.
Just one last thing is just to say thank you, Patrick, for a very, very insightful presentation. I think all of us learned a lot, and this is just a small token of our appreciation. Down for the picture.
Some nights I wonder if you get those goosebumps when I talk to you, girl. Cause you know I do, you know I do. Painting faces in the sand, watching as you dance.
Can you give another round of applause, please?
This is an MUT Radio podcast.